Welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show. Well, we're not live. I'm live, but this is taped. The live slash taped show that's all about the issues of aging. How do we take care of mom and dad, ourselves, grandma and grandpa, our best friend, our spouse, whoever it is? How do we make wise decisions? How do we answer the two great questions as we get older? Who's going to take care of me? And how am I going to pay for it? Glad to have you with us right here on KFBK and KSTE for 18 years. The longest running show of its kind on senior issues in California, maybe in the country. Lots of Johnny Come Latelys, lots of camp followers, lots of other people talking about all kinds of stuff. But if you want the single most reliable source for information on the issues of aging, you have arrived at the right place. Glad to have you with us. We're going to talk about some interesting things today. I'm going to talk about the worst investment on the planet. No, that's really the title of the show, The Worst Investment on the Planet. Before we get on to that, let me give you some information that you have to have. First of all, I have to say this at every show. I have to say this at every workshop. I have to say this every place I go because there's some rule somewhere that says I have to say the following. So bear with me. Remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. If you want legal advice, you should consult an attorney. I'm not securities licensed. I have a California insurance license. I have a legal document assistant license allowing me to prepare legal documents at your request, recorded in Sacramento, California, or Sacramento County, California. Everything we talk about here is my opinion only and should not be taken as for any form of legal, tax, or investment advice. If you need any of those, talk to somebody you think knows what they're doing. That said, I've been talking about the things I'm going to talk about today for 30 years, maybe longer. And they're controversial. And everybody has an opinion, and we'll get to that in a minute. And it all has to do with, at the end, Dr. Atul Gawande, in his seminal book, Being Mortal, B-E-I-N-G, Mortal, M-O-R-T-A-L, you should get it and you should read it. I've read it probably 5 or 6 times. I've probably given away 100 copies. If you have not read it, go read it. There's nothing quite like it. But one of the comments he makes, and I don't have the book in front of me. I wish I did. I lent my last copy to somebody. One of the things he says, and this is a paraphrase, is contrary to reality, contrary to perception, the reality of life is that at some point in our life, we will all, and he says all, we will all lose our independence. We will all become dependent on someone else. Now, the only thing that stops that is death. If we don't die, we will eventually become dependent on someone else before we die. And the two questions that have to be answered when dealing with that reality is, who's going to take care of me when that happens, and how am I going to pay for it? And today we're going to focus a little bit, at least for the first half hour, on how am I going to pay for this? Where's the money going to come from? How am I going to be wise? And as part of all of that, we're going to talk about the worst investment there is. I'm going to tell you what that is. You're going to think when I say it, you're going to go, well, that's easy. No, it's not. What I'm about to tell you is really quite profound. When you're looking around and you're trying to figure out how to make your money last, and how are we going to make money to take care of mom, or how are we going to preserve money to take care of mom? I had somebody call me today or yesterday, I don't remember which, And they're looking at having to put mom in long-term care, and they have $160,000. And when you think about that, you go, well, that's a lot of money. $160,000 is a lot of money. But mom has a life expectancy of 6 years. If you divide 6 into 160, you get about $28,000 a year to take care of mom. Now, if you're looking at home care that costs $8,000 to $12,000 a month, or assisted living that costs $4,000 to $6,000 a month, or a nursing home that costs $10,000 a month, all of a sudden, pardon me, all of a sudden, that doesn't sound like a lot of money, does it? Get a drink here. So money becomes relative when it's all that we have. And that's what we're going to use to take care of that person in our life that we love. So preserving money and the wise use of money makes a lot of sense. Now, everybody, if you Google financial advice, you'll probably get 50,000 pages of people ready to give you financial advice. If you Google stockbrokers, you'll get 200,000 websites. If you Google insurance agents, you'll get 200,000 websites. My point is what? Everybody, how many financial channels are there on TV? A lot. Everywhere you turn, there's financial advice. There's a newspaper, the biggest selling newspaper in America, the Wall Street Journal. I'm not counting USA Today because I'm talking about a real newspaper. The largest selling newspaper in the United States is the Wall Street Journal. It's all about financial advice. If you go to the financial advice section in your favorite bookstore or library, how many books do you think you would find? And a month from now, you'd find a whole bunch of new ones because somebody else would have an idea. Everybody has an idea. I'm reading a book right now, the name of which I cannot remember. I tell you what it was. It's about 2 inches thick. And it's on economics. And it's about the history of economics since 1800 and blah, 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 and what's happened. And it's really an extremely well-written book, but I can't remember the name of it. I know it has bourgeois in the title, but don't ask me what the title is. I've forgotten. By the way, where did I see the book? In the review section of the Wall Street Journal, which is about finance. So my point is, what I'm going to talk about is my opinion only. It's not a solicitation. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I'm talking to you in real terms about the finance of aging. And by the way, I've never talked to a person who didn't have a broker, who didn't tell me that their broker was the best broker ever. Now, I don't know about you, but there can't be that many best brokers ever. Every broker has lost somebody money, and every broker has made somebody money. Every insurance agent has lost somebody money, and everyone's made somebody money. It's just a reality of life. As I've been saying here for years when it comes to long-term care planning, if anybody tells you they have the answer, run. And the same thing is true with financial stuff. If anybody tells you they have the answer, including me, run. What I want to talk to you about is some answers. Maybe some you haven't thought about. Now, the first one is when we get older and we're talking about money, the first thing we have to do is understand how long it might have to last. So, you know, an 80-year-old woman has a life expectancy of just under a decade. Stop and think about that for a minute. A 90-year-old woman has a life expectancy of about another 4 years. Life expectancy is getting longer. Is getting longer and longer and longer and longer and longer. And we're going to need the money that we have to take care of us as we age, and as we lose independence and as we become more frail. So I want to talk to you today about some general ways of looking at money. Now, first of all, let me answer the question, what's the worst investment there is? Whichever one you've lost money on. Everybody has one of those. If you're making money on it, even if it's crummy, even if it's whatever, you like it. Why? Because it's making you money. So the worst investment is the one that loses you money. Why do most people have a house? Most people have a house because it goes up in value, so it's generally considered a good investment. But lots of people who bought houses in 2006 didn't do so well come 2007 and 2008. So the one thing, the shock to the system, it was the one thing we always depended on, all of a sudden forced millions of people into bankruptcy and foreclosure. And by the way, we have more derivatives in place today, and you can now go get mortgages again, interest only, 97% of value. So we're right back to where we were in 2007. We've returned to the same place with the same foolishness. Just saying. Again, just my opinion. So let's talk in general terms. And the first thing I want you to do is if you've got a piece of paper, and you should listen to this show with a piece of paper, draw a line across the top of the page and bisect that line halfway through it and draw a line all the way down to the bottom. On the left-hand side, write risk. And on the left-hand side, write risk. And on the right-hand side, write return. Because that scale has to be somewhat balanced. If you want more return, well, Bob, this is economics 101. I know, but do you know how many people don't get this? If you want more return, you have to take more risk. If you want zero risk or very low risk, then you're going to get less return. I know that sounds simple, but it's a fundamental of everything we're going to talk about. Now, as we get older, and again, I'm not an economist, this is just a lot of years of experience doing this and observing and being a student of all of this. As we get older, should we be more concerned about risk or more concerned about return? I think we should be more concerned about risk than return. Why? Because once you're retired, you have no way to replace capital. You're not working anymore. You're actually in a position where you're going to begin to use up capital as you get older, whether you like it or not, because at some point in your life, unless you drop dead of a heart attack, you're going to need somebody to help you. You're going to need some form of care. It's really simple. It's not rocket science. It's harder. Why? Because you can't build a rocket, but you can do this. And so this is stuff that applies to you that you have to think through and you have to make sense out of it. Do you know how many shows there are on the radio and TV and the internet and YouTube and whatever there are all giving you advice on finances? But I'm just talking about basics. I'm not telling you what to buy or don't buy. I'm just telling you, you need to first always think in on your scale of risk on one side and return on the other, and then rate them with whatever system you want, a 5-star system, a 1 to 10 scale, or whatever. So on the risk, is it a 1 being no risk and a 10 being a lot of risk? Whatever you're in, where does it fit on that scale? And then on the other side, on the return side, with return being 0 and 20% interest being a 10 when it comes to risk, what side of that are you on? How do you measure those two things? Come up with your own system. There are all kinds of formal systems, none of which any of us are going to understand, because we're not economists. The Fed doesn't even know what to do right now. There's a big fight going on at the Federal Reserve. Politics is involved. Oh, gee, politics is involved. What a surprise. As to how all of it gets balanced. Well, they're dealing with funny money because they can print it anytime they want. In our world, we have to deal with the actual money that we have. And we have to determine how much risk can I take to get the return that I need to make my money last as long as possible. Now, let's look at risk. On the risk side, what has very little risk? A savings account. If you put a savings account in a bank, it's insured. It has almost no risk. In theory, there's some risk. It's negligible if the government went under. But what's your return? Zero? 0.1%? I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you tell me. So on the risk side, there's no risk. But on the return side, there's also very little or no return. Does that make sense? I hope it does. So on one side, very little risk. On the other side, very little return. Now, on the other side is gold mining in Bolivia, which if they hit the gold mine or drilling an oil well, if they drill the oil well or they hit the gold mine, the return could be huge. But what's the risk? On a scale of 1 to 10, it's at least a 10. You might make more money, but you're going to risk it all. I see those all day long. I see people with stuff that I look at and go, okay, you'll hear the term high-yield bonds. That sounds good. I want some of that. High yield, that sounds good. The other name high-yield bonds are known by are junk bonds. And if they're corporate bonds, not a stockbroker, my opinion only, if they're corporate bonds, you're betting on what? That the corporation stays in business. Why do you think corporate bonds pay more than government bonds? Because there's more risk with a company, so they have to pay you more interest to get you. I just read it yesterday or today. Venezuela. Venezuelan bonds are the hottest bonds in the world right now. Venezuelan bonds. Now, for any of you that have paid any attention to Venezuela, do you think there's a lot of risk buying bonds with Venezuela or very little risk buying bonds in Venezuela? But they're the highest paying bonds in the world. It's something like 9% or something like that. You know, you make 9%, 10%. So you have to determine what risk are you willing to take to get a decent return so that at least your money is beating inflation, which is right now around 1.5% to 2%. Everybody lies about it at the government level. So we don't know exactly what it is, but it's in that neighborhood. So, what are the things with very little risk? Well, money market funds, although you can lose money on those, and in Europe, money market funds in a lot of places have gone to negative interest. Because people want safety, and they're willing to actually lose money to have it be safe. So, you have to take a look at savings accounts, checking accounts, money market accounts, CDs. Right before I went on the air, I looked up one-year CDs. You can get anywhere from 1.2% down to 0.5% on a one-year CD. But very safe. You're about going to break even on inflation, But at least you won't be going backwards. And when you need that money, it will be there to take care of you. Government bonds are relatively safe. They're more risky. Why? Because you can lose money on government bonds. Bob, how could I lose money on a government bond? Again, not a stockbroker, my opinion only. Let's say you buy a bond today that's paying you 2% interest, and it's a 30-year bond. Now, you agree to take the 2% over the 30 years, and that sounds really good. It beats a CD. I'm going to take 2% or whatever it is. But let's say interest rates start going up again over the next 10 years, and 6 or 8 or 9 years from now, interest rates, let's think of the Jimmy Carter years. Those of you that are old enough to remember Jimmy Carter, let's remember those years. Let's remember the years of inflation and high interest rates. But CDs were paying 8, 10%. Bonds were paying 8, 10%. Some CDs were paying 10, 11%. So now all of a sudden the rate on bonds goes up to 7%. Now if you need your money, nobody wants your 2% bond because they can go out and buy a bond at 7% interest. So in order for you to get money, you would have to sell your bonds at a discount, which means you could lose principal. And yes, it has happened before. But relatively speaking, government bonds are safe. What else is fairly low risk? Some corporate bonds, especially those that pay really good dividends with really good companies, can be really good things. And generally speaking, bondholders come before stockholders. Not always, but generally speaking, again, my opinion only. So those are safe things. What else? Annuities. And I'm not afraid to use the word. Now, there are let me tell you how many people there are out there doing money shows and never mention the word annuity. And what they really are is they sell annuities. It's not a swear word, folks. Annuities have been around for 200 years. I mean, they've been around for a long time. I think the oldest insurance company, as I remember in the United States, is Presbyterian Minister's Fund, which has been around for like 200 years. Annuities and insurance and products have been around in England for 500. How long has Lloyd's of London been around? Or the big insurance companies in Germany or France? It's not new. They've been around for a long time. They have a very good track record. By the way, when banks were going broke during the Depression, who wasn't going broke? Insurance companies, for the most part. In fact, at many points, the insurance industry lent the U.S. government money. So annuities, the right kind of annuities, you got to understand their limitations, got to understand their risk versus return, you got to understand the limitations, you have to understand all that stuff. But I looked it up right before I did this show. I looked up CD rates and money market rates, and I looked up annuity rates. Here's a two-year annuity paying 1.5% interest, just flat interest, to 1.5% for 2 years. Here's one for 5 years paying 2.65%. 2.45 under $250,000, 2.65 over $250,000, fixed interest rate. Won't change for 5 years. Now, when you stop and think about it, that ain't so bad. Now, so the risk is very low. The return is pretty good. What's the risk? The risk is if you needed all your money at once, there's probably going to be a surrender charge. And if it's a variable annuity because it's in the stock market, you could lose principal. And with variable annuities, you pay a fee. With fixed annuities, most of them, you pay no fee. Most fixed annuities are no load. There's no front end or back end fee that the company charges you. With variable annuities, there's usually a fee charged every year, anywhere from 1% to 2%, sometimes more. But the right annuity in the right hands has a very good risk-return ratio. Okay, what's another comment on the stock market? What's the risk-return ratio? How many of you that have a brokerage account? This is, oh gosh, I'm about to run out. You know what? I'm gonna wrap this up here and I'll come back and finish after the break. Don't forget, during the break, go to my website, assetsandaging.com. The clock is running out here. Assetsandaging.com. Assetsandaging.com. You can fool around there or call me at 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. For more information, or get to one of my workshops, or you can listen to my radio shows or podcasts on my website, or sign up for my free email newsletter. So make sure you take a little time during the break to go do that. I'll be back in about, oh, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, something like that. We'll finish up our discussion right here on Assets and Aging, Affording the Future. Don't go away. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show that's all about the issues of aging. Let me give you my website and all that information again. My website address is assetsandaging, A-S-S-E-T-S-A-N-D-A-G-I-N-G, assetsandaging.com. I got into the subject so fast first half hour, forgot to give that out at the beginning. You can go to my website, you can get information, you can sign up for my email newsletter, you can sign up for a workshop, you can get in to see me, you can email me a question, you can do all kinds of things. Or you can just call me, 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. And again, you can come in and see me. The consultation is free. That means it doesn't cost anything. It's very relaxed. We're going to sit and chat, and we'll talk about your issues and your plan and what works for you and all of that kind of stuff to make sure that when you begin to lose independence, you're able to deal with the two great questions: who's going to take care of me and how am I going to pay for it? So we've been talking about money issues, and I've asked you to create a scale, you know, draw a line down the middle of a piece of paper and then across the top of the line so it looks like a big T, and on the left hand side write risk and on the right hand side write return, and we're going through things and talking about what has a low risk versus rate of return, what has a high rate of return but also high risk, because they go together. Low risk, low return. High risk, high return. And a combination of those. You might have some stuff that's a little bit at high risk and other stuff that's safe. So we've gone through the whole list of things that are on the low risk side. And one of the things I hadn't gotten to yet, we had just started and I realized, whew, the last half hour went fast. I'm glad I looked at the clock. So the last thing we started to talk about, the last two things, were the stock market and real estate. So again, I'm not a broker. I'm not giving you advice. I'm not telling you what to buy. I'm just talking. This is my opinion only. So when we go to the risk versus return scale here, the stock market can be very safe or it can be very risky. The stock market is not one thing. Again, if you looked up stockbrokers or brokerage companies, you're going to find 200,000 websites or more on the computer. So when you start talking about stocks and bonds, again, you have to understand you have to buy them. When you buy them, there's a commission. When you sell them, there's also could be a commission. There could also be a management fee. So whenever you're doing those kinds of things, you always have to work with net numbers, not gross numbers. So if I invest $100 in the stock market, after commissions and fees, how much of it actually got invested and whatever. So you got to look at that. Then you have to figure out, and this is where I started to talk, Those of you that have a brokerage account, I don't care who it's with. How many of you know whether or not you've given your broker a power of attorney in which he can do trading in your account without your permission? If you don't know, you better ask. Secondly, how many of you can actually, I know there are some of you that can, but how many of you, when you get that 30-page statement every month or every quarter, how many of you can actually read it? So how many of you actually know what the risk versus the return is internally inside of your account? Or do you just look at it and say, I had $100,000, now I have $101,000, so I made money. The other thing you have to find out is, did that $1,000 I supposedly make, was that before or after they adjusted it for fees? So or maybe you just own stocks direct. You have the actual stock certificate. It's rare now, but it still happens. Do you know what you have? Do you know what the dividend is? Do you know how that works? Do you know what they're available, how to resell them in the market? Do you know who you would sell them to? Do you know what the risk of the company is? Do you know its price earnings ratio? Do you know its capitalization? Do you know all the stuff that it? Lots of people have made lots of money in the stock market. I remember I started out talking about the safe stuff, savings accounts, and as I move up the chain here, now there are other things in the stock market that you can mitigate your risk. You can take less risk, like mutual funds or index funds or some other things. And I'm not telling you should go buy any of those. I'm telling you should go look. So at the end of the day, the issue is, do you understand when you look at your little chart with where is the risk and what's the return? Do you actually know what the return is on your investments? Because some people, when you look at their 30-page brokerage return, they don't have an investment. They have 50 different investments inside that account. Do you know what's happening to every one of your 50 different investments? So the stock market has more upside, but for those people, so for instance, if you bought stock in 2007 at the height of the market, by 2009, you had lost a third to a half. If you had nothing and you bought into the stock market in 2008, you've done really well because you got lucky and you bought at the bottom. Now the stock market is where it is. What's it going to do next? Again, if you seek advice online or in the paper, everyone will have a different opinion. I have no opinion. I'm not a securities guy. I have my own opinion. But everybody should have an idea of what's going to happen. The last thing I want to talk about, there's lots of other stuff. I'm not going to talk about metals. I'm not going to talk about gold and silver because in my humble opinion, they're commodities, not investments. That's just my opinion. Is real estate. Now, you can buy, lots of us, I have real estate. I live in a house. I have real estate. Do you treat your real estate as an investment? You should, because that may be what's going to take care of you when you get older. The money in that real estate, the equity you have, may be what takes care of you. So what's the risk versus the return? Right now, it's not making you any actual return because you don't get a check every month, do you? But it has potential return. If you sold it or if you rented it, it could produce return on your investment. And by the way, in all of this, I have not talked about taxes. And the reason I haven't is because I'm not a tax expert and I don't want to add to everybody's confusion. I think you would understand that. So then you could also own investment real estate. You could own a rental. You could own a warehouse. You could own a commercial building. You could own a real estate investment trust or part of that. You could own deeds of trust. You could own all kinds of things in real estate. And again, you have to apply your little chart, which is risk versus return. And as you see returns go up, you will see a corresponding risk go up. I hear real estate investment trusts are now advertised on the radio. I'm not going to give you a name, but I hear them advertised on the radio. And they sound really, 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 really good. In fact, there was an article, I think, today in the Wall Street Journal on one of them. But you only have a share in the company. If the underlying real estate goes bad, your risk, not only is your return going to go down, but your risk could become really high. So we've gone all the way through from a checking account through savings, through annuities, through all kinds of things. And as we've gone through, we've always tried to talk about return versus risk. And when we start looking at higher returns, we start looking at higher risk. So what's your risk tolerance? Do you know what your risk tolerance is? Do you know what you have? Do you understand how it works? If you have a CD, do you really understand how it works? Because remember, the interest you're earning on that CD is taxable. Therefore, your actual rate of return could be lower than what the bank is paying you. The same thing on everything we've talked about. Annuities are a little different. They're tax deferred. You defer the tax to some future date, which allows compounding in some cases to work better. Real estate has tax advantages and tax disadvantages. My point in all of this is I think it's really important for you, as the person that I'm talking to go through this little exercise. I think it's important. It's an important exercise. I think you should go through this little exercise of sitting there with a piece of paper and making a like a T on it. And on the left-hand side, you put risk, and on the right-hand side, return. Write down where you think the risk is and what you own versus its return. And is the return worth the risk? If you need more return, are you willing to take a little bit more risk? Are you willing to talk about things that are outside the box? Banks have done, those of you that have followed a recent bank that's had a lot of trouble, banks have done a really good job of doing one thing, and that is convincing everyone that the only place that you can save safely is inside that building down at the corner. And that simply is not true. And it's especially not true when you start looking at inflation and you start looking at fees and costs and you start looking at, is my money going to grow enough? Is there going to be enough return so that my money will take care of me when I get older? Do a compounding sometime on $100,000 at 1% interest for 5 years. And you won't have nearly, now do the same thing at 2%. So just take a calculator, okay, and just, do it five times. So if you had $100,000, at the end of the first year, you'd have $101,000. Now the next year, you'd make 1%, so you'd make $1,100. And so on. And then the next year you'd make 1% on that gain. And see how much you have at the end of 5 years. Now do the same thing with 2%. Now do the same thing with 3%. And you will begin to see that the numbers change dramatically. Now, are you willing to take a little bit more risk, be a little bit more patient with your money, and make 3, 4, or 5%? And then do the math and say, wait a minute, this is a lot better. I'm 65 years old or 70 years old. 10 years from now, my $100,000 could either be growing at 1% or it could grow at 3%. Gee, and the risk is about the same. So you have to look at that and begin to figure out where your risk return ratio belongs. It's really important to do. It's important to understand how safe what you have is, what the real numbers are. And I'll tell you something else I always tell my clients. Gross never counts. Bob, I don't understand that. When you were making a living and you were working and somebody asked you what your salary was or how much you made, what did you tell them, the gross number or the net number? You told them the gross number. But that's not what you took home in your paycheck. You might have been making $1,000 a month, but you weren't taking home $1,000 a month. And the same thing is true with putting money aside and protecting money to take care of me. Only net counts, not gross. If I'm grossing 3%, inflation's 2%, and the broker's charging me a 1% fee, how much money did I make on my 3% investment? Net, not gross. Everybody follow me? Let me do it again. Gross doesn't count, only net. So in whatever I have, if I'm making 3% and inflation is 2%, and whoever I bought it from, there's a 1% fee, annual fee. How much did I make net on my 3%? The answer is I made zero. And that's why gross becomes really important. It's also important to understand how the person selling you something gets paid. How much? Does it come out of the product? Does it come out of the front end? Does it come out of the back end? Is it an annual fee? Is it a one-time fee? Is the fee absorbed by the company or by you? Absorbed by the company in that the rate of return might be lower, but you don't have to pay an upfront charge. How does all of that happen? It's really important to understand, because understanding gross versus net is a really, really important thing. Does it guarantee an income? For instance, there are some annuities called immediate annuities. In fact, in England, most pension plans are funded with immediate annuities. Immediate annuities pay you a fixed rate of income on something for as long as you live, and longer in some cases, because you could have something that pays for a period certain, and if you die, your heirs continue to get those payments until all the money's been paid back. But you know, and by the way, you can set those up either at a fixed rate of return or at a variable or adjustable rate of return. So there are products out there that are safe, that are secure, in which you will know every month exactly what your income is going to be. And for a lot of you, that would be really nice. It would be really nice. It would be nice for you to know that every month you have X amount of money coming in. I'm not telling you to go do it. I'm just telling you that a lot of people, it's very helpful when they know that for the rest of their life, the rest of their spouse's life, the rest of grandma's life, he or she or whoever is going to get a check every month for a specific amount of money, and it will never vary, and that it will never be lost. Those kinds of things are available if you're willing to expand your horizons a little bit past the building down in the corner. So as you begin to digest all of this, and because right now a lot of you, your eyes are glazed over, just keep going back to the original equation, the original exercise I had you do, which is draw T on a piece of paper, and on the top left, write risk, and on the top right, return, and then rate what you have, risk versus return. And ask yourself if the return is enough to keep you ahead of the game. That's the simplest way to figure all this out. Whatever you're in, I don't care whether it's in, as I said, from a checking account to real estate to investments to annuities to savings to CDs to money markets to whatever it is you have, to savings bonds. Oh, I meant to look up what savings bonds were paying right now, and I didn't, so I can't tell you. That's another safe investment. So you have to kind of decide when you sit down and you look at yourself, or you look at mom, or you look at dad, or you look at grandpa or grandma or whatever, and you look at what you have. And that's one more exercise I'm going to make you do. Write down what you have on a piece of paper and include the equity in your house. You can keep them in different categories, but write down not your furniture and stuff, because it's not worth what you think it is unless you have a Rembrandt. But write down what you have, including the equity in your house, because that's what's going to take care of you. And then do the little exercise about risk and return. And is your return on what you have, you know, are you happy every month, every 6 months or every year to go down to the bank and renew your 3/4% CD and now get 3/4, 5 basis points more, or now you're making a whole 1%, or wherever it is. If you're happy doing that, understand the difference between gross and net. Are you willing to look outside? Are you willing to think in different ways? Are you willing to expand your horizons? Or are you locked into a specific point of view? And one of the things I've been helping clients do for years and years and years is think always in terms of long-term care. Not how much am I going to leave my kids. If there's anything left, yeah, I'd like to leave it to my kids and grandkids. But if I need it, to take care of me, how long will it last? If I need it to take care of my spouse, how long will it last? If grandma needs it to take care of herself, how long will it last? And are you willing to use it? Everything you have to think of in terms of how long will it take care of that loved one? How long will everybody wants to stay home? Everybody. So what you have, when you add it up, how long will it let you stay at home? When people come to my workshops, it's one of the exercises I make them go through. I have a little page, and they actually have to go through the math, and they have to figure that out, and they have to figure out how much they have. And then they figure out their life expectancy, and then they figure out the cost of care, and they figure out how much their money would last. And when I'm done with that exercise, everyone in the room is silent. And I never tell them how much to pick for. I said, you can pick $2,000 a month for care. You can pick $5,000 a month for care. You can pick whatever. So let's say somebody has a 5-year life expectancy. And let's say it's going to cost them $4,000 a month to take care of themselves. Well, 5 times 12 is 60. That's how many months there are. 60 times 4,000 a month is just under $250,000. We're not even talking about expensive care yet, folks. We're talking about just $4,000 a month for assisted living or a little home care. We're not talking about the big money yet. We're not talking about $8,000 or $10,000 a month. We're just talking about $4,000 a month. And we just going to keep them at home. we're just going to get a part-time caregiver for 4 years, 5 years. It's going to cost $250,000. So where you're invested and what you're doing and your risk return quotient and your ability to understand it can make a huge difference in where you spend the last years of your life. Everybody wants to stay at home, but if you don't go through this and if you don't sit down with somebody who can help you figure it out financially, the odds are it will not work out for you. So go to my website, assetsandaging.com, assetsandaging.com. You can go there and you can look up my upcoming workshops. You can look up my phone number. You can listen to my past podcasts and radio shows. You can do all of those things. You can sign up for my email newsletter. You can come in and see me. The appointment is free. You can do all of that stuff right on my website. Or if you don't have a computer or a smartphone or you don't know how to use it, just call my number. It's an 800 number, even though I'm here in Sacramento. It's an 800 number. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. It's a simple number to remember. It's a hard number to call because it means you actually have to start and you need to begin to think in a different way as you begin to lose your independence or that person you love. Look forward to seeing you here next week. Go to the website, listen to the shows, get to the workshop, but begin to make a difference in your life. Get in to see me right here on Assets and Aging. I'll see you next week. You all have a wonderful week. Bye.